We hear you. Oh, we hear how restless you are in that work Zoom call. You want to see what's happening in the world of sport in the quiet, don't you? Scroll through the OTB Sports app, catch the latest sports headlines, and bookmark those podcasts you want to get stuck into as soon as this meeting is over. Nobody will know. The OTB Podcast Network with GetSet Go. Are you ready for quick start car insurance? Get a quote today at GetSetGo.ie.
Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.
It's time to turn our attention to rugby now. A defeat for Leinster, another frustrating outing for them. It's been a difficult couple of months while Connacht and Ulster wrapped up their season with wins at the weekend. Munster not in action. They have their last Pro 14 Rainbow Cup game against Zebre next weekend, knowing a win could put them through to the final against the winners of the South African division. James Downey is with me now on Skype to chat through things. James, how are you this evening?
Good, thanks, Neil. Keeping well.
Yeah, unfortunately, we were obviously going to be talking about the weekend that was in rugby, but a bit of news this morning that came in, and it's bad news for Andrew Porter. Obviously, when the Lions squad was announced, I think everyone in the back of their minds is constantly wondering, like, who is going to be that first person, unfortunately, that has to pull up injured, and who is going to be the unlucky person to miss out. There's always a few before the Lions tour, and there's probably going to be a few more as well before they even kick things off. But Andrew Porter was confirmed this morning, a toe injury he picked up against the Glasgow Warriors on Friday night. He is ruled out, the 25-year-old, and replaced by Kyle Sinclair. Warren Gatland said, "It's really bad for Andrew. We send him our very best wishes for a quick and successful rehab. Andrew is a young man with a big future ahead of him, and I'm sure he'll be in contention again in 4 years' time." But James, just an absolute hammer blow for Andrew Porter. He's had a fantastic season. As we said earlier on in the show, he had to carry the can for a long time with Leinster and Ireland, with Tadhg Furlong out injured, and I think he'd justifiably earned his selection in the Lions squad this time round, and just a huge blow for him.
Absolutely massive, yeah. It's the big news, you know. You're kind of coming into today and I was looking at the games again, and then you kind of hear that news filtering through, and oh, you're absolutely good for the fella. Like, there's always one or two, like you see when the squads are announced, that there's always a couple of people that break down and there's always a question mark, especially in these Rainbow Cup games, you know, that how important are they, and do you want to kind of take a knee and look after your body and just kind of let other lads kind of roll it out? And it's a testament to the lads that they want to keep playing and they want to keep doing it. You know, the easy thing would be to wrap yourself up in cotton wool. I was even watching Exeter Northampton today, and I think Sam Simmons went off with an ankle injury, and it's just these small little things, you know, but absolutely good for Porter. He's been so good this year, really has, and thought he really deserved it. And yeah, it's absolutely gutting. Like, from it just goes to show the frailty of the game and how quickly it can turn. And all of a sudden, Kyle Sinclair's now in, and he's got a chance. And a couple of weeks ago, people were talking about his interview and how emotionally he spoke when he was interviewed inside of a pitch for Bristol. But really good for Andrew. Thought he really deserved it. He's one of those guys who goes about his business kind of under the radar, and yeah, he's a good attitude to it, and yeah, very disappointing.
Yeah, and look, as Warren Gatland said, he's certainly going to be in contention again in 4 years' time, you'd have to think, but a hammer blow from him, from his point of view. But as you said there as well, it is just the way things are going at the moment now after a squad like that is announced. You are always looking anytime a player takes a big knock, as you mentioned Sam Simmons earlier on this afternoon, like anytime there's some bit of a knock to one of these players, anytime one of them even makes a bit of a high tackle, like when Robbie Henshaw had that tackle against Ulster a couple of weeks ago and the TMO was looking at, I know myself at home, I was doing the calculations in my head of, well, God, if Robbie Henshaw was to get a red card here, what sort of a ban would he be looking at? You know, when would he be in line to come back? Those kind of things are constantly just rattling through your head as you watch it.
Yeah, it's exactly that. And I think, especially nowadays, the squads are so big, and I was wondering how they were going to do it going into the Lions, and how you're going to have your standby squad and who's going to be ready and where would they be based. And because every year, it happens every single, sorry, not every year, but every time there's a Lions call up or a Lions tour, I think, off the top of my head now, I'm not sure about the numbers that went down, but I remember there's a group of the Welsh players that went out late the last time, and So some of them would be on holidays and they get called up. And I remember Stephen Donald, even from the All Blacks point of view, was fishing when he got called up to kick to play against the Lions and kicked it, you know. And look, this is what kind of makes the game. And look, it's bad luck for Andrew on this occasion. It's probably going to be bad luck for a couple of other players because the nature of the game, the way it's going, the physicality of the game. And when they're down there, especially against South Africans, you're probably going to lose a couple more players. So it can make other people, but it's the fertility of the game, unfortunately. And it's exciting as well. It's just a pity that this happened to an Irish player.
Yeah, it really is. And look, as we kind of said there as well, like as disappointing as it is for someone like Andrew Porter, and obviously we're going to talk about Porter a little bit more because he's Irish and stuff. It's obviously the call that Kyle Sinclair has been waiting for a few weeks. Like everyone, I think absolutely everyone was stunned when he didn't make the squad initially. And you referenced his post-match interview a couple of days afterwards when he was man of the match for Bristol. And like it kind of goes to show that don't throw the toys out of the pram. Put your head down and knuckle down because the opportunities are probably going to come around at some point.
They will. And that's... and look, we do focus on that whole Irish element of things. I think another one that like... James Ryan as well is obviously a massive one that wasn't involved from an Irish perspective. And I think that if he'd gotten on board due to an injury to another player, we'll all be delighted that he gets called up and that he fully deserves it. So you've just got to be ready. And these players are, geez, they're so in tune to things and the game is so fickle and injuries happen at the click of a finger, you know. And we've seen it at the weekend. There's still a lot of rugby to play. And even when they're on the plane, it's not done and dusted. There's plenty of time to be called up. And I mentioned there the physicality of the South Africans. And OK, there's not going to be as many games as there normally is. But still, you'd expect to lose one or two. And they're going to have to call up players. And it's certainly up to them. And it's... Look, it's there's the pros and cons of these tours. And it's the excitement. And look... people's names get made on these tours, and if you can get called up and make a name, why not? But yeah, look, it's someone like Kyle Sinclair, I think will take this chance, you know. I really do. I was disappointed for him. I do think he's played extremely well, but then you're kind of going, who do you leave out? But then this affords the opportunities, injuries do, and that's the nature of it.
Yeah, it certainly is. On Leinster overall, this probably capped off a pretty frustrating weekend for them. It's like they were beaten by Glasgow on Friday night, so it means that the game this coming weekend, which is actually going to have fans at it as well at the RDS, is unfortunately going to be a dead rubber after the fans have waited so long to get back into the stadium. But Leo Cullen, I thought, had some interesting quotes after that game against Glasgow, just about how the last couple of months have just faded out for Leinster and they've kind of stuttered their way through things. So he says, we played Munster the week before the semi-final of Europe. We had a big win against Exeter in the quarter-finals. But those 2 weeks, we tried to manage some of our players for Europe in that home game, which we lose. Then we lose the semi-final away. It was a pretty costly 2 weeks for us. We've been chasing things since then. That's a fairly accurate summary, I think, of the last 6 weeks or so from Leinster's point of view, where they've just... nothing really has gone right ever since that Exeter game. They go in against Munster. Obviously, they're resting players for the semi-final against La Rochelle. Munster put a decent beating on them. And then they go out the following week and they end up losing to La Rochelle. And things have just kind of... it's just fizzling out a season from then on to here, isn't it?
Yeah, massively so. And you think of the focus that you put from a Leinster perspective into these games, they're such big games, and to lose then, you know, it's so hard to pick yourself back up. And Leinster have been so good at it recently and over recent years, and they've shown that they can win all these tournaments. But when they lose, it's very hard to emotionally pick yourself back up as well and focus on the next job. And unfortunately, in terms of the Rainbow Cup, I don't think it's grabbed the attention of anyone really at the moment, with things gone on, but with no fans there, it's been quite tough to kind of, I suppose, a bit of motivation there, you know. And yeah, there's going to be supporters against the Dragons on Monday week, and it'll be great to have supporters back, but it's kind of too late. It has fizzled out. There hasn't been that hype about this Rainbow Cup. It's players have seen it as kind of a elongated season, just filling in a couple of weeks because they need to get the money in, and It has been frustrating for everyone. But yeah, from the Leinster perspective, I certainly think that they wouldn't have expected it. They would have expected to win that game against Glasgow. And it is those, I suppose, the Glasgow players, you got to give credit to them, and they're losing a lot of players this year, and it's a send-off for them. It was the last home game, so these small things count. And Leinster didn't really, potentially could have gotten in, but didn't really have too much to play for. And yeah, kind of really has fizzled out from where we thought they were going to be walking away with a bit of silverware. They're walking away with nothing at the end.
Yeah, and look, obviously, the way the tournament was lined out, it was always going to be difficult for more than one Irish team to be competing at the latter stages of this Rainbow Cup, since they were all playing each other in those opening few games. So, you know, you were thinking it was either going to be one of the four Irish provinces, or none of them were going to be, you know, hanging around for this last game to try and make a final, particularly when it's just one team from this group of 12 that are going for the final, and then on into the game against the South African side. But like on that Leinster and Glasgow game, in fairness to Glasgow, they played Leinster the right way, got under their skins pretty much from the first minute.
Yeah, I think they did, and they used that. Look, I think there's a lot of motivation as well. Like I mentioned it briefly there about that last home game for those players. You're up against Leinster. They've been the flag bearers in the Pro 14 for the past couple of years, and every time you play against them, you really want to put your best foot forward. You know you have to be at your best. You can't go in there pretty relaxed and try and throw it around. You have to show a bit of respect and beat them up front and try and do that. And Glasgow are pretty impressive in how they went about it. Yeah, they got away with a few lucky calls as well. And Leinster were unlucky. And, you know, the two Hugo Keenan tries that were disallowed, again, pretty unlucky. You take those away and it's a bit closer than you think. But no, credit to Glasgow and how they went about it, because Glasgow have had quite an up and down season. They haven't been as good as they have been. Now they're in with a great shout already with this, but yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what happens with that. But no, Glasgow went about it the right way.
Yeah, they certainly did. So Glasgow at the moment, they're top of the Pro 14 Rainbow Cup standings. So they're in first place on 19 points. They've played all five of their games, though. Benetton are in second on 18. And then you have Munster in third place. They're on 15 points, with Cardiff Blues also on 15 as well. But Cardiff have played all five of their games. So Benetton and Munster, you're thinking one of those two more than likely are going to be getting through to the final, barring a defeat for both of those teams. So Munster are up against Zebre this Friday. What they need, Munster know that if they beat Zebre and the Ospreys beat Benetton, then it is the Ospreys, then Munster are going to go through. Unfortunately for Munster, it's not really in their hands, though, because any win for Benetton against the Ospreys, whether it's a bonus point or not, that will put them through to the final against the winners of the South African tier of the competition. But it is Munster, James, who are the Irish side who do have a chance going into this final round of games. I know it's not a Heineken Champions Cup, it's not a full Pro 14 competition, but would a bit of silverware, some bit of silverware at least, do something to kind of appease the frustrations that have been hanging around there for the last couple of years, that they haven't been able to break through to a glass ceiling, and just kind of give them the belief maybe for next season that, you know, they have that little taste of what silverware is like?
You're really clutching there on things to kind of try and hold up. But I do think it's potentially a chance to win something and to show you can actually win a final if they can get to that final. Yeah, maybe that's subconsciously that could be there down the line. But look, I just think it'll be a nice finish to an end of the season, really. And you're going to come back into next season with a bit more pep in your step, and you can use it whatever way you want to use that to motivate yourself. Yeah, I think so. I don't think down the line, if it's a European semi-final, that this will be there. Well, we won the Rainbow Cup and this is our chance to kick forwards. You know, well, look, in saying that now, I haven't seen too much of the South African team, so they seem pretty decent. So that should increase competition next year. But honestly, no, I think players are kind of hanging on now at this stage and looking forward to getting a bit of a break and coming back and starting the season afresh.
Yeah, a few other issues cropping up at the moment, and I think it's one massive frustration that people have had with the Rainbow Cup so far. The captain's challenge. The players don't seem particularly certain of when it is to be used and under what circumstances they can use it. The officials don't even seem 100% either, because there have been a couple of instances where captains have called for it, they've been told they haven't been allowed to use it, and in the end, when you go back and look back through the ruling, they probably would have been allowed to. There have also been a few instances when captain's challenges have been put in, and then when you look back at the rule books, they probably shouldn't have been allowed to be used. Nobody's entirely certain about what it's doing. It's slowing down the game, and it just seems to be a complete and utter mess at the moment.
Yeah, agree with absolutely everything you said there. Absolute mess. It's bad enough with VAR and football, so I think it's this is just so frustrating, you know. And I think you see the pass that went forward for Glasgow's try, like an absolute mile forward, and yet no, it's not done. It's so frustrating. I think the referees, it's so stop start, and they're taking so long to make a decision. It really is frustrating for a supporter watching it. I can only imagine what it is like being on the field. And it stops momentums of things, and it stops, like, if you're smart about it, you can kind of go in and do it and frustrate opposition with it. You know, it's really kind of a tool you can use, but it's just been so frustrating, to be totally honest with you, and how you see it. And it's adding on 10, 20 minutes, half an hour to all these games. And it's bad enough at all the scrum resets, you know yourself, Neil, that no one likes these scrum resets.
Except me.
Yeah, exactly. but like that's slow enough and adding so much to a game. And regardless of this, it's something needs to be done. I don't know if they're going to have a review and say, will we use this going forward? Probably be one that they won't, and I hope they don't.
Yeah, I can't see it happening. It's funny, like, there have been so many law trials over the last 15, 20 years in rugby. Some have worked well, some haven't. I can't remember, though, a single law trial that has been as universally derided as this one.
Yeah, well, but it's just so confusing. I think, like, the referees are unsure, the players are unsure because it's so new, because they've played a certain way all season, and then for the last couple of months, it's, okay, these new rules are in. Sure, half the time players have gone to take a 22. Oh, hang on, it's not a 22. It's a dropout, and they're like, oh yeah, and like, it's just a bit of a kind of shambles, you know. It's a bit of a kind of pre-season feel about a pre-season tournament where we'll try something and try and make it. Look, they're trying to make the game more entertaining, and they're trying to make the game faster. This certainly isn't helping the game go faster. So some things, what I would take forward, not sure, to be honest. Maybe the kick and the kind of your 40-20 that you have in rugby league, something similar to that. But other than that, no, I wouldn't take too much, just to kind of break up the players in the front line, because the front line defences are so strong now. I think you should be rewarded if you put more players in the backfield. There should be more space.
Yeah.
To bring more attack.
Yeah, I was a bit frustrated they didn't actually take on that 50-22 trial in the Rainbow Cup, because I was watching a little bit of across Super Rugby in Australia earlier on this year, and it wasn't something that was changing the game dramatically. It wasn't having a massive impact on the game. It wasn't even cropping up in every single match. It was just every now and again, maybe once every two or three games, someone would pop one in, and when you see it happen, you'd go, oh, that was a nice little kick. And now, you know, now they're after getting a line out in the opposition 22 or something like that, and it was one of those things that had very little impact on the game, but when it actually happened, you sat back and went, oh, that was nice. Now, that was interesting. There's a good reward coming off the back of that. So I was kind of a bit annoyed we didn't get to see it in the trial out in the Pro 14 Rainbow Cup.
Yeah, that was one that jumped out for me. And it's just, I think, as you said, you're rewarded for that actual smart play and that heads up play. When you're faced with a lot, especially the way defences are now, it's come across in rugby league that you'll have 14 players in the line and you'll have one person covering the backfield, and you might have a winger drop back. And if there's so much space there, if you can kick it in there, and it still takes a lot of accuracy to put it in there, so it's a skill in itself to put it in there and to be on the money. I think it is a just reward that, yeah, look, there's no space for us. Let's keep the game going forward. We're in the front foot, kick it in behind, and we get an attacking line out, and it's a just reward. And if, completely agree, you say that doesn't happen much, and it doesn't, but it gives the team an opportunity where if it's a blanket defence, we can change something. And if a team wants to counter that, and they can drop someone out, and that means there's going to be space somewhere else. So, and that will lead to more attack and running rugby, which is what everyone wants to see. But I think that when we are up against these blanket defences, it might be a bad shout. But yeah, hopefully they might bring it in and trial it. As you say, it's not used at all, or maybe once a game, if that. But it could be used as a decent weapon. There's some very good kickers out there.
Yeah, certainly will be. On trying to speed up the game in general, like, we're probably taking it as a given that the captain's challenge is going to be scrapped going into next season. But even aside from the captain's challenge, even before that was introduced into the Rainbow Cup, like, the issue of how long a game of rugby is taking to complete is still a massive issue. Like, it's routine now from kickoff to full time, you're talking 2 hours if you include your halftime break in between. And if you consider an average soccer game, it's 10 minutes extra of playing time, and they're getting to full time probably 5 to 10 minutes before your average rugby game is. So you're talking realistically, like, there's probably the guts of 10 to 15 extra minutes that it's taking a rugby game to actually complete. And eventually, if that keeps growing, it's going to become very, very hard to attract fans into it, because there are just so many stoppages at the moment. If we're taking it as a given that the captain's challenge goes, what else can be done to actually trim up the timeline of what it's taken to complete a game of rugby?
Oh, for me, the massive one that jumps out is those scrums, the reset of scrums. Like, you can be so cute and smart and run down that clock, and I'm sure someone has done it and worked out the times and how many minutes of a game goes by. Like, you can drop, take a hit, or hang on, re-stand up, walk your front row back. You know, you're just killing time, killing seconds. Being smart in the referee, not all the time the referee will say, stop the clock, you know, and that's another frustrating thing. He'll just let it go, which is the wrong thing, because lads are time wasting, but just need to go make a decision, give a free kick. Let's not have a word with them and reset and go again. It takes momentum out of it. If a team's going forward, other teams can be smart in how they slow down that clock. And like, you take a front rower and put them down on the ground, no scrum can happen. So it just slows the whole thing down. And it frustrates everyone. And then referees who are unsure, and the touch judges, and they call him over one side, he goes over to the tight head, and then it's happening on the loose head. Like, so frustrating. Refs just need to make a decision. Let's go quick. Let's play quick. If you're going to mess around, this is what's going to happen, and they should be punished, and just make the game quicker. I know you'd probably prefer to see scrums all day long, but
sometimes you just need to catch your breath. You know, you need a break. You need to slow things down to get a bit of air back into the lungs. You know,
so that's why it's kick-off. That was the call all the time, wasn't it? Kick-off, have a break. All the front rowers take a break. Someone takes a knee. But look, I do appreciate a good scrum. I really do when it happens, but not when there's so much messing going on and it's 4 or 5 minutes eating into one scrum. And and I do understand conditions and everything have to be taken into consideration, especially the wet days when front rowers are losing their feet. It's just kind of a smart decision.
Yeah, no, 100%. Bang on, agree with you there, as much as we were joking. A couple more bits I want to chat about. David Nusifora had his kind of biannual briefing this week, and one thing that cropped up, and always crops up obviously, is players outside of Ireland being able to represent Ireland, or not being able to represent Ireland at the moment, or not being considered for selection. And it probably cropped up again where you had the likes of Sean O'Brien, who's leaving Connacht as an example. He's moving to the Exeter Chiefs next season. Looks like a brilliant move for him, for example, because as people have said, like, he's found himself behind the likes of Bundiaki, and there's, you know, Tom Daly, who's been brilliant, Tom Farrell at Connacht as well, who's excellent. There's a long list of players there for a centre like him to be trying to get in ahead of. But is it about time, when you consider how many Irish players are having to go abroad to fulfil a career, and particularly now with COVID, where there had been cutbacks and you're probably seeing a few more players being released and going looking for clubs abroad, is it high time that there is some sort of an arrangement made where, even if the IRFU were to kind of specifically find a club or make some sort of an arrangement with a team, be it in France or in England, that if they want Irish players to be going out, getting more exposure out there, that, you know, you can say to them, have an arrangement in place where that player might go out to a certain club in England for a couple of years, be able to play consistent rugby and impress, and if they do play really, really well, they can be selected to play for Ireland.
Well, the obvious one there is your London Irish, and they've obviously spoken about that a couple of years ago, where they said, oh, it's going to be the fifth province, and I personally don't see that as a viable option. I just think it's as a result of the amount of players coming through, that there's so many quality players coming through, and there's not room for everyone there. And the reality is that they have to move abroad. They understand that, players do understand that when you move abroad, that this is a decision. And especially for the younger players, I don't think it's as much of an issue. And for young guys, so take Sean O'Brien, I could be wrong, but I'm sure he's not thinking, oh, my Ireland chances here in a bit of trouble. I think he's going, I'm going over here. What an opportunity for a young guy who's been playing absolutely brilliant. He'll look at the depth chart in Connacht and go, there's a lot of centres there, you know, and Tom Farrell's coming back from injury, and Sammy Arnold's there, and you mentioned the two guys, Bundy there and Tom Daly. So there's four quality centres ahead before he goes anywhere. And then Exeter comes up, and you look at the Exeter centres and you might go, okay, Devoto's there, Henry Slade's there. When they're away, who's there? Ian Whitten's there, he'll be finishing up. And there's a great chance for him there, you know, and he's got to be smart, and he has been smart, and go, if I go over there, if I can play well, and play extremely well for Exeter, who are one of the top sides in England, who knows what happens? An Irish province might come in from again, and then the Irish number comes up on the radar again. But if you're talking about players who are established players, who are current internationals per se, I don't know. Like we saw when it happened before with Johnny, okay, it was the kind of Johnny clause that he was away, but they were looking, it was Johnny who was too valuable to Irish rugby at the time, that we needed him there. Now, especially with Nusa Fora, I don't think he sees that there's one person bigger than the rest, you know, bigger than the RFU. So players who are going to go away, not when Nusa Fora is there, certainly, I certainly don't see that changing. And players know it, Neil. You know, I think it weighs up. It's got to be something when you sit down and weigh everything up, be it money, be it whatever, be it lifestyle. You've got to kind of sit down and go, what works, what doesn't work, and do I want to give up Irish, like national, represent my country? Because there's a lot of other things that are there as well. It's your physio. It's like you forget how well the Irish players get looked after over here. They really do. Medically, they get the best of everything, and then the RFU as well control the players in terms of when they're playing. So you go abroad, you're not getting that. So there's a lot to weigh up, and giving up an international career is a big, big decision to make.
Certainly is on someone like Sean O'Brien or other younger players as well who've had to go out and try forge their own path. It's something you obviously did earlier on in your career when you weren't able to get a break somewhere in Ireland, and you went out and, you know, you played in Italy, you played in England, you had a long career outside of Ireland as well as in it. Are we seeing more younger players taking that chance to try and go off the beaten track a little bit more, rather than kind of, if their dreams of playing for an Irish province don't come through, if they maybe even younger than someone like Sean O'Brien, if they're not getting through an academy or something like that, that they're maybe a little bit more willing to take a chance and, you know, go out to Italy, go out to France or somewhere like that, play Pro D2 in France and take a chance on the rugby career?
Yeah, I really do. And there has been some players already that have gone over. There's Will Hickey's gone to Ospreys this year. Carl Martin's gone to, is it Montpellier, I think.
Jack Regan actually as well, obviously.
Yeah, exactly. But, and again, he took a punt and went down to New Zealand and played club rugby down there, and now he's coming back, and he's come back to Ospreys. And this is great for Irish rugby, that the more players we have playing at a better level. And sometimes guys get to a situation where it's right, you got to sit back and look at the depth chart and go, where do I stand, and what do I think? And everyone's very different, and it only comes down to that individual and how you make that decision, because we can all be presented with it and come out with three or four different ways of doing it. And some boys are very happy to go, do you know what, this is a great opportunity for me, experience something in my mid-teens, or sorry, not my mid-teens, in my mid-20s, go to England, go to France, get a lifestyle, and there's always a chance you can come back. Like, you're not, like, that was the quote in my head when I was doing it, was, can I always go home? Like, I was always Irish qualified, and it's, players are always needed sometimes in Ireland, and to be, have the Irish qualification helps. So I think you will see a lot more players come over. I think there's a lot more openness to taking players from Irish provinces, because they're so strong, and because the conveyor belt of players coming through the provinces, there's not room for everyone, so there's got to be room somewhere.
Yeah, I think it's really, really good to see so many players out there taking chances at, you know, less high-profile clubs outside of Ireland as well, particularly, as we said, someone like Jack Regan going down to the Southern Hemisphere, taking a punt, and look, he's coming back, playing for, could be packing down alongside Alan Wynne-Jones next season. Before we let you go, James, obviously Japan and the USA coming up for Ireland next month. We're obviously missing a few players off on Lions duty, and this is kind of traditionally that summer where you're able to take a chance on some of the younger players. You're able to kind of give a bit of exposure to players who haven't had it. Any kind of few guys you'd like to see given a chance over the next next month against Japan and the USA?
Certainly Gavin Coombs. I'd love to see him involved and see him get a crack. You know, I think he's been so consistent with Munster and what he's done, and every time he's played, he's a step above. I really think I'd love to see him rewarded. I'm looking forward to seeing Ryan Baird get a crack as well. I think he's kind of stuttered a little bit recently, but I just think he just a bit more game time, and him at that international level can step up. Craig Casey again, just seeing more of these players, and to see Joey back as well, to get in there and playing at that international, because this is this is a great chance for some of the future internationals, just to get in, but not just future, not just looking too far ahead. Like, you're looking down a year or two down the line as well, of these guys can potentially be pushing for a World Cup, and these guys want to be pushing for World Cup, and this is the first opportunity. Look, there hasn't been too much international rugby being played, so this is a great chance for some young players, and there are plenty of young players coming through. And yeah, I'm trying to think of an unorthodox selection of a player, but don't really jump it out, but I'm really looking forward to seeing it though.
Would there be any temptation to maybe rest the likes of Johnny Sexton or Keane Healy, or do you kind of have to balance it with what the player wants? I would imagine both of those two guys, for example, there's nothing else we need to find out about them, but I would imagine they're going to want to be keeping fairly sharp just in case the phone rings from Warren Gatland at any point.
Yeah, and this is like, for me, I'd leave them at home. You know exactly what they can do. Like, playing against a Japan or a USA isn't going to do too much for them. Yeah, okay, stay sharp, but I'd leave them at home. This is what an opportunity this is for young guys to get the minutes and to be in that environment, because we all know what those lads and the senior boys can do. This is a great opportunity for these young guys to get in, and it's the future. You know, you're looking at a couple of lads that'll be this year, a couple of lads will be next year, a couple of lads that could be 2 or 3, 4 years down the line, where they're really going to be an impact. But now is the time to get them into it. Like, you know, if they're old enough, they're good enough, so get them in there. Sorry, if they're good enough, they're old enough, the way around. Get them in there, because we know what Johnny can do. We know what Keane Healy can do. We know what Keith Earls can do. There's no need, you know. Personally, I'm sure they want to be in there because they want to be wearing green, and that's, I completely understand that. And of course, with some of those personalities, it's going to be very hard to say, stay at home and put your feet up. And they certainly won't want to do it. But I think there's no need for them to be involved. For me personally, I think I'd love to see these young guys get a chance and be rewarded.
All right. Well, James, pleasure chatting to you as always.
Thank you very much, Neil. Cheers.
James Downey there. Our rugby coverage and Off the Ball is brought to you with thanks to Vodafone, Team of Us, everyone in
rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of Us, everyone in.
The OTB Podcast Network with Get Set Go. Are you ready for quick start car insurance? Get a quote today at getsetgo.ie.